set.
The Antioch Podcast.
A podcast about learning to lead in the multi-ethnic church.
Have mercy.
Aprendiendo a liderar en la iglesia multiétnica.
Let me say it one more time. The Antioch Podcast.
A podcast ministry of Madison Church.
Oh, I got Jesus, yay.
Hello, and welcome to episode 31 of the Antioch Podcast, where we talk about worshiping together in the multi-ethnic church. This is the beginning of a six-part series of talks called Worshiping Diversely Together, inspired by Sandra Maria Van Opstal's recent book, The Next Worship, Glorifying God in a Diverse World. Van Opstal was our first guest on the podcast way back in episode 4. As we've said in earlier episodes, this podcast comes out of Madison Church, a 100-plus-year-old multi-ethnic congregation in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, we've had our share of struggles and successes over the past century, and we would be the first to admit that we don't have all the answers on how to worship well together as a successful multi-ethnic congregation. In fact, we've made some really big mistakes over the years. Mistakes that we've learned from and some that we still make. And as host of this podcast and director of worship design at one of our campus locations, I want to personalize this. I've made my own share of mistakes in helping my congregational circle worship well together. At Madison Church, we don't have all the answers, but we are committed to having ongoing conversations about how we can better follow Scripture so that we can worship well together. Now, this is where Van Opstal's book comes in. Last year, one of our former worship directors, Shelley Fineweaver, read this book and felt that this book would be very helpful for us at Madison to read together. Many of our worship team members got copies of the book and read it. And over the ministry year, Shelley and her intern, Ben Hookman, put together this six-part lecture series for the Wednesday Night Out midweek ministry at one of our campus locations. These talks were recorded, and we're releasing them now to you here. I would encourage you, if you haven't already done so, to purchase a copy of The Next Worship, so you can read some of the material that inspired each talk in the series. This episode, by Reverend Reggie Smith, covers Chapter 1, Tension at the Table. Reverend Reggie Smith was previously featured on the Antioch Worship Leadership Podcast in episode 23. Reverend Smith is the former pastor of Roosevelt Park CRC and the present director of the Office of Race Relations and the Office of Social Justice for the Christian Reformed Church in North America. In addition, he works as program affiliate for the Calvin Institute of Christian Worship, is a regular contributing writer to the Grand Rapids Times, and is a husband and father. He and his family attend Madison Church's Square Campus. Let's go now and listen to the episode.
I was a pastor for 20 years at Roosevelt Park, and all there on the southwest side. Amber was what was with me for all those two decades. And I'm going to tell you a little story about something that happened in like the fifth or sixth year. Well, first of all, Granville Avenue was the flagship church on the southwest side. In fact, it was the largest church in the 1920s and 30s. It was one of the, in fact, they had about four services, two in Dutch and two in English. And when I came in 1994, they still had quite a few people who still spoke Dutch as their first language. I didn't pick that up at, you know, in the hood or anything like that. But they did teach me a few cuss words. But any other than that, Granville Avenue was, like I said, a flag, and it was very different in terms of that. It was very evangelistic. It was very casual, and those things were really, really at the heart of Granville Avenue at the time that I got there. Bethel was the first English-speaking church, or daughter church, from Granville Avenue. And it was for the second generation around 1915. But it was called, in its heyday, the Le Grave of the Southwest Side, which means that they were very highly liturgical. They had about four choirs, two handbell choirs. Most of the people who would come would be from the Free University in Amsterdam, and they would make Bethel one of the first places they would go, even before they went to Calvin Seminary. So they had a very prestigious pulpit there on the Southwest Side. Worship became a real big thing. And it began when we had two different ways in which we were going to do worship. One was that we would have people come up, a little bit like Madison, where we would have people come up and that they would take communion. And then there was a more traditional way in which people would sit down and they would pass the elements through the pew. Well, the elders decided that they wanted to have two different ways in order to do that, and decided that that would happen. In fact, people would actually call to see which way it was going to be done. If it was going to be done coming up, those who didn't like that didn't come. If it was going to be sitting down, those who didn't like that didn't come. And you would think that communion was probably one of those one times when there would be some unity in the house, right? There'd be some love in the house. We did this for about a year. And everybody thought this was normal. Did you catch the sense of that? This is communion. Gathering around the table. And this is probably one of our most tenuous and tenuous moments as a church. Around the table. It would be fair to say that there was tension around the table. Why is that? Because both had two different mental models of how they saw worship. How worship was supposed to happen, how worship was supposed to have that communion, how worship was supposed to have in singing. All those things came into a head. Even though there were two churches that came together, they had very different mental models of how they saw worship. And it became a point of contention. That doesn't happen at Madison, right? Well, what is a mental model? We all have them. In fact, culture, to be said, is that here's the way we do things around here. That's what a mental model is. It is the filter of expectations about culture, life, and family, and value, and religion that has been passed down from generation to generation. The lenses through which life is seen and judged about the world of others. And I want you to catch that, about the world of others. All you have to do is have two married people come together, and they have two different views of how they see the children are going to be raised. Or if a couple comes together and they say, you know, where are we going to go for Thanksgiving? Are we going to go to your parents or are we going to my parents? This is usually the first fight that couples have. Where are we going to spend our holidays together? Our mental models are the things in which we grew up with. It's in our bones. It's in our DNA. It's in how we look and see and touch and feel about the world. And whenever we are entering into somebody else's world, there is a clash of mental models. Can we all agree that we all have mental models? And when someone clashes with that mental model that is different than ours, we got tension. Why why do people's mental models cause tension in multicultural churches? I want to just throw this out as a question. Why do they clash? Why is there tension when people who come from very different walks of life have problems, especially when it comes to worship? But it's interesting that when Christians talk about, well, we're supposed to get along. We're supposed to be like Rodney King. Can't we just all get along? Can't we just all be, because we're Christian. And yet, when we step into the worship space, there is a clash of mental models, of how we see worship is supposed to happen, and especially when it's cross-cultural. Usually the way that we see that is that someone has to win and somebody's got to lose. Somebody's got to win and somebody has to lose. And you're hoping that you're the one who wins. And just if they would just do things your way, life would be so much better. Now, I'm not going to go through any biblical topography or models like that because you all know them. But I want to get at more in terms of the psychology and the sociology that happens in multicultural churches when it comes to worship and why it becomes actually the place in which we clash, but also the place in which great creativity and also healing can come from that as well. The clash of mental models feels like someone is forcing something alien upon you. And I want to use the word force. At this church, we sing loud. At my church, I prefer silence, because I think silence is the best way to be close to God. We prefer the hymnal so that we can be able to sing the notes. We prefer that people would just stay in their lane and not come next to me when I'm in the pew. We all have those things in which sometimes we feel forced into somebody else's model and we don't get a chance to negotiate that. How many of you ever had that experience? Very often, people church shop just for that reason, because they want to fit into something that's a little bit more comfortable. But here at Madison, you decided to go against the culture. You decided that it would not be the point of contention, but it would actually be the place in which you would enter into and accept that being uncomfortable is really about that's being comfortable. Hey, adorale, adorale, no te quedes calladito, adorale. Lord, what did you sign up for? Like someone is forcing something alien, some alien view upon us. Sandra put it this way, and this is a story about a young man who has to sing somebody else's songs in the book. And I love the way that he says this. Why are you forcing me to sing in other languages? Amber, do you remember that? Why do we have to sing Spanish? We don't want to sing those Spanish songs. Like you forcing me to sing those songs. Can't we just sing in English? Oh, because 100 years before that, we sung in Dutch. But anyway, a young student assumed that his preference for English rock contemporary Christian music was the form and style everyone could relate to. That's when we think that our way is the... What was that? The right way. Notice that when you say right, I didn't say white, right. Trying to be intentional now. There's a value attached to that, right? That we're making a value judgment. And whenever we make value judgments, then we say the cost is high. And so that's when we begin to see things as win or lose. Says that God invites us to come to his table. The emphasis, it ain't your table. It's God's table. And that has always and will be continue to cause tension, given that diverse nature of his people. This particularly pronounced in worship where people desire authentic spaces to express themselves. It's God's table. The hardest thing for us to grasp is God's table. And he invites all kinds of people to that table. And the good part is, we don't get to dictate who comes. We would like to. We would like to have some hoops in which people, and we do have that. But when you're talking about a multicultural setting, a multicultural, multiracial, multi-bilingual service, or where people gather together, you are always inviting tension from the get-go. And sometimes that's the hard thing. You just say, can we just not have any more tension no more? Just don't change. And there's an answer for that. It's called death. Always a part of what it means to be dynamic and growing and flourishing. Tension is absolutely the place in which all innovation and creativity happens. It doesn't happen if there's just a sense or a control for sameness. We can't have biblical worship without embracing tension. It is the very thing that creates dynamic worship and draws diverse people to Christ. Embracing tension. Those two words has everything to do with what Madison has been doing for the last 100 years. Now, when I mention those two words, embracing tension, give me your reflections on that. Embracing tension. Anxiety. The anxiety level rises because when there's tension, you can feel it. You know it, and it can become contagious. What else? Embracing tension. How many times we gonna sing this song? Ain't they done yet? When is Pastor Darryl going to wrap it up? We like sermons in 20 minutes. Or please, don't change communion this time. Don't do something finagle new way. And can't we just stay with English? Can we just stay with that? It's good for us. Embracing tension means to go against your own mental model. And you do it for the sacrifice of the whole. You give up your own agenda for the sake of others to get in and to be a part of that space, which is one of the hardest things to do because worship is so emotional and worship is personal. In And so, in a sense, it's going against the grain of what you really want for the sake of someone else to be invited to have a space at the Lord's table or whatever part of worship that may be. Servant worshiper. That means that we step away from being a consumer. It's all about me. In which we all become almost 300 small churches that happen to occupy one space. Is there a history of tension with worship at Madison Square CRC? This is not in the book. I had the opportunity to do some research for the chapter that I wrote, and I wrote from the years of 1978 to 2001 in the Madison book.
The Madison book that Pastor Reggie refers to is a book called This Far by Faith, a history of Madison Church that was published for our 100-year anniversary. This book is well known to our congregation and had contributions from quite a number of different congregants who've been with the church for a long time, Pastor Reggie being one of them. So he's referring to the chapter that he helped write. So with that information, let's go back and listen to what Pastor Reggie has to say.
And during that time, it was that time that Madison was making a big transition from being this small chapel to now being this multiracial, multicultural megachurch. It happened within those years, 1978 to 2001. And the pastor at that time was Dave Sipliga and Dante Venegas, and they said that they felt the tension of discipling new Christians with complaints from members who grew up in the Christian Reformed Church. The council expressed the need to be more flexible for new Christians. It has been expressed by many mature Christians that worship, preaching, music has been increasingly geared towards new Christians and non-Christians. That was a huge point of contention way back in 1980. Madison was stepping into the realm of saying that we are going to do something differently than what other churches are doing at that time, which was to not even talk about or to enter into that kind of realm, because they knew if you start to change worship, people get upset. People get angry. People will go and send letters to the elders and say, y'all need to get rid of this. Worship is the place in which we want our own way to be as it was. All of us have it. All of us have that thing which we say, I want something that is comfortable for me. That was happening way back in 1980. Does the Christian Reformed Church encourage tension for diverse worship? What do you think the answer is to that? What do you think? Yes? No? Not really? I don't care? Well, it discourages tension in worship. There was a time in which the liturgy was the same no matter which church you went to, whether you went to Linden, Washington, Bellflower, California, Whitensville, Massachusetts, for almost 90 years. You could always, it was like McDonald's. It would always have the same liturgy. It says this, Al Mohler said, the tight social fabric of the Dutch immigrant communities had two consequences. It gave cohesion to the CRC communities and simultaneously separated congregations from race and ethnicity than themselves. That was done on purpose. For almost a century, the Christian Reformed Church did not change its liturgy in order for other people who were different than them to enter into worship. On purpose. Most Christian Reformed churches were birthed by two ways, immigration and procreation. Most churches were franchised for themselves by church, home, and school. So if there was someone who came in differently, like in the case of Madison, Madison was started as a chapel in order to reach those who had walked away from the Christian Reformed Church and those from Appalachia. That it would be a comfortable place in which you can come in and you didn't have to go to an organized church where everything or everybody conformed to the way and the social norms of how things were supposed to be. Very often, I think people who come in don't realize this, that this is part of our history. This is part of who we are. It's not to deride it. It's just to say, this is a fact. This is our social, this is our sociology. This is how we gather, and especially in worship. Isolation is our strength. That was a slogan for an awful long time. Isolation is our strength. I need you to sense the power and the weightiness of that. This was the way in which worship was seen towards only those who were on the inside. Not geared for those on the outside. Isolation is our strength. It's kind of the opposite, huh? Sandra says, diverse worship is great for a conference, but not my local congregation. The primary reason that we should pursue multicultural worship, however, is neither pragmatic or a trend, but biblical community and mission. That's really the heart of our argument. That worship is about biblical community and mission. It is about being the people of God out of Acts and Corinthians, but also that we will also practice the same things in Acts, that we are reaching people across all kinds of boundaries to be a part of the kingdom of God and to be a member of his community. This is the one that rubs us the wrong way because it brings us back to tension. You got to love tension. I'm not going to say that many more times. You have to love tension. To be a multiracial, multicultural church, it means that you accept that part of what it means to be together is embracing tension. Because what you're saying is that you are gathering with people who are very different from you, and at the same time that you're going to create enough space that biblical community happens, and that God continues to gather all of his children into the house. Reverend Dave simply stressed that Madison Square CRC was a home for misfits. I love that. Misfits. In light of this, he insisted that the music would be lively with a broad cultural expression, more geared towards the community. Our growth must be slow and steady. It is important to preserve our unique character, both our interracial makeup and the dynamic, and this is key, of our worship life. Biblical community and missiology. They are mirrored and molded and wedded together. They cannot be separated. They are two sides of the same coin. And that was way back in 1978. Some of you were born, you know, in that time, 1978. But look at that. Interracial makeup and the dynamic of our worship life. They had already accepted that tension was going to be a part of the game. It will be part of who we are. It'll be part of the DNA. Can you embrace the awkward? When I just say that word, what comes to mind for you? I just watch people like that. I just go, oh, Lord, bless their heart. Just bless their heart. When you get to heaven, you are going to be on tune. You're going to be all right, but you're practicing now. It's going to take you about 70 years, but that's all right. You practice. What else is about awkwardness? What do you notice about awkwardness in worship? What do you notice about awkwardness? Because you look around. I know you do. What do you notice? Some people are standing up, and some are sitting down and looking at everybody else and say, I am not doing that. I just might hurt myself. Or some will say, we're all, they're just all over. And slinging off the chandeliers. Well, we don't have any chandeliers. But if they could, they would. What else do you notice? How flags are used in worship. Some do it well, and some, well, just hope they don't poke anybody in the eye and that liability won't go up. Yes. Raising of hands. That people are demonstrative. Spontaneous dancing. Just getting up there and in the spirit. And some are saying, I am doing that in my mind. I'm doing it right up here in this 3.5-pound thing on the top of my head. The worst thing that we hate is to feel awkward because it means we're uncomfortable. It means that we don't know exactly what's going on. It means we wish that we could do something confidently. It's like going to another country and knowing that you can't speak the language. And sometimes you do this thing where you talk louder and think that you're going to be understood more. I know some of you have done that. And you think, oh, this is the way in which you do it. No, this is not the way you do it. That's awkward. The master's invitation list reveals no favoritism at the table. All are invited to the banquet. Social elites as well as those who are from the highways and byways, the tension mounts. Doesn't go down, it goes up. People from different ethnic and socioeconomic standings together all around the same thing, and the result is awkward dinner conversation. Let's face it, we tend to avoid parties where we expect awkwardness. We don't like to do things if we don't feel confident about it. We avoid it. We step away. How about in worship? It happens all the time. When some new song comes out and we don't sing it as well, or how do we embrace awkwardness as not as something to avoid, but rather something to embrace? Because here's the thing, we're not being graded on it. Very often, we think that we are being graded, that we're getting A's and B's and C's and D's, or an occasional F. But that's not what God is doing. He's saying, make a joyful noise unto the Lord. And he doesn't matter if you squeal or if you sing perfectly. But awkwardness creates space for others to be a part of. One of the hardest things for Americans to do is not to give themselves grades and other people grades. And that there's space enough for everybody to get in. In 1980, Madison Square held a prayer and revival Wednesday services during the summer of 1980. They began attracting people who were open to prayer and healing. You need to know this. Madison was an outlier in the 1980s. There were not many churches that were doing this, or take that back, who would be allowed to do that. Because that would break with traditional liturgy. And the moment that you have other people who are different from you coming in and they make requests for healing and for prayer in worship was not to happen. There were huge fights about that. And yet this little church in 1980 was going to do that. Openly attract people who were for healing and prayer in worship. It was unheard of at that time. This was Madison Square's vision statement. Way back in the day, Madison Square has been called by the Lord and is being empowered by the Spirit to be a reconciling, healing community of the King and to do the reconciling, healing power work of Jesus. Not many churches had that. This is absolutely an outlier par excellence. And I mean it in this way, that they were inviting not only the community in, but also saying, Lord, change us. It was never a one-way, but rather a two-way. There was a mutuality that if you invite people in who are different than you, then guess what? You're going to change as well. And you are inviting awkwardness and tension at the same time. And you say that is normal. It's normal. In 1984, both Venegas and Belin stressed to the elders that they had to make the first move. They told the elders, Lord have mercy, which encouraged people to come up for altar calls after the preaching of the word. And by 1986, the elders and pastors developed the process of prayer and healing in worship that became permanent. In Madison Square's worship life. When you read something like this, what does it say to you? Way back in 1986, it's continually evolving. Always evolving. You know, this was Madison Square's liturgy in 1985. They have a welcome, responsive reading, and they even practice silence way back then. Mutual greeting and family announcements, and then, but this one, joys and concerns and testimonies. Nobody else did that. That's just inviting tension. Because you never know what people going to say or what they going to let all their business out. And they did. And yet, at the same time, people were comfortable with that. It wasn't something that was shocking or even awkward. It was just who we are. Just who we are. And then also the invitation to prayer. To have an altar call in the Christian Reformed Church was a no-no. You weren't supposed to do that. That's too evangelical. It's too evangelistic. The Lord knows who's saved. We just go wait for him to make the call. That's what, how we did things. But here Madison was entering into the fray of saying, this has to happen. Evangelistic. Dante Vanega said this, and I'm going to start right here. I find that our ministry here at Madison Square is challenging. And then going down to say, where churches are dying from attrition and old age, our church continues to prosper with new members and young blood. Where there are still other churches that have not made inroads into their communities and parish areas, we have left with the challenge before us, and at least we are moving in this direction. Where other churches did not have viable evangelistic ministry, we are on the cutting edge of moving towards developing our evangelistic thrust. If nothing else, Madison Square Church is a place of challenge and vitality. The late Dante Vanegas. That's what you signed up for. That is part of your history. That is part of your legacy. To be this kind of church, worshiping diversely, multicultural, multiracial, multilingual, this is who you are. One of the new challenges and opportunities. We can't just settle for preferences. You can't just settle for your own preference. That's not enough. The challenge is to pay or not to pay for an African American director in 1988. And the story of that is, there was a lady by the name of Alice Finley who asked the church to pay for her to be the choir director. Already knows this because he was a part of it. And the elders have said no, because they never pay for choir directors. There have always been volunteers. Well, there was a wrestling of the spirit, if you will, and they made this decision to hire George Davis as their first gospel music director in 1988. Well, why did they do that? This is what the elders said, the council said. Madison Square Church is a multiracial congregation and most maintain a good balance in the styles that nurture the congregation. In order to address the lack of balance in our present worship style, we must spend the money and give support to a gifted black musician who has excellent leadership abilities. Here's the crux of it. Even though it creates inequity, listen to that. Even though it creates inequity with only one other director, the goals of our church and the mission to provide a worship service that reaches a multiracial community, we believe that this inequity is wise. That is countercultural. It was this statement in which Madison began to explode. They went from 347 people to 5 years later, over 1,000.
At this point, Pastor Reggie decided to break and take questions from those in attendance about the Christian Reformed Church, the history of our denomination, the history of Madison Church, as well as other questions about worship which those in attendance had. Someone in the audience asked a question about why he chose to talk about Madison's history as a way of summing up this chapter from the next worship. Let's listen to what Pastor Reggie has to say as a closing to this talk.
It's amazing that churches, and the reason that I did the history about talking about tension is because we have a history of trying to squelch tension by all means necessary, because we've always seen it as bad. And that's a value judgment. And we have to somehow move away from that to say that tension is something that is where the Holy Spirit hangs out. But also God is developing and moving us and nudging us in also our own stiff-neckedness.
You've been listening to the Antioch Podcast.
This concludes our broadcast day.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Goodbye.
God bless.
Thank you so much.
Antioch Podcast listeners, we'd love to stay in touch. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, as well as on the web at www.antiochpodcast.org. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please rate and review us. Positive reviews help others find us when looking for quality podcasts. And now, for our regular post-podcast disclaimer.
You have been listening to the Antioch Podcast. The opinions expressed on the Antioch Podcast are not the official views of Madison Church, its leadership, or the denomination of Z Christian Reformed Church. Madison Church is a member of the Christian Reformed Church and adheres to its doctrinal standards. The purpose of this podcast is to provide recorded examples of the kinds of conversations which we believe churches need to have in an increasingly diverse world. These kinds of conversations pave the way for a multi-ethnic congregation to design worship services with unity and justice, and truly worship God diversely together. Thanks for listening. Bye.